Former Philadelphia District Attorney Seth Williams is starting a five-year prison term today. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. A federal judge sentenced Williams to the maximum possible punishment for one bribery charge, to which he pleaded guilty earlier this year. WHYY's Bobby Allen was in the courtroom and has this report.
As Seth Williams sat at the counsel table in a brown T-shirt and gray sweatpants, he had his lawyer, Tom Burke, read a statement to the judge.
Your Honor, I owe a huge apology to the people of Philadelphia.
As Burke read, tears rolled from Williams' eyes. He wiped them away and tried to fight the emotion. Williams was once seen as a rising star in the Democratic Party. He came into office with excitement from supporters. He was seen as a criminal justice reformer. Now, he was begging a judge to show him mercy.
Serving as the district attorney for the city I love and becoming the first African-American DA in the history of Philadelphia was a privilege of my life. But rather than holding myself to a higher standard, I squandered that trust placed in me. I am truly sorry.
In June, Williams ended his two-week corruption trial abruptly by pleading guilty to one of 29 corruption-related charges he faced. The jury never had a chance to decide his fate because he agreed to be convicted of abusing his office by repaying people who gave him lavish gifts, personal favors with the power of the DA's office. Prosecutor Bob Zosmer told the judge that this was not some ordinary crime. It was one that affected hundreds of prosecutors in the DA's office.
And to have the elected district attorney be exposed as someone who is selling his office for favors, who is committing other frauds, has a devastating effect on them and on their pursuit of justice that they're trying to accomplish every day.
Then the matter was in the hands of U.S. District Judge Paul Diamond, and he was unequivocal in speaking to Williams. He delivered one line after the next that at times made members of the audience gasp at how hard he came down on Williams.
You sold yourself to the parasites you surrounded yourself with. You impaired the criminal justice system, a district attorney who wasn't licensed to practice law, and you harmed all the citizens of this city.
Williams' lawyer asked Diamond if he could see his 85-year-old mother before his prison term began, and Diamond called this request, quote, outrageous, since Williams was charged with stealing $23,000 intended for his mother's care.
The defendant dumped her like a sack of potatoes, or he washed his hands of her, whichever metaphor you want to use, and feigned great ignorance of his obligation. Well, no, it's the nursing home. It's the nursing home that has to pay for her care. I have to be a high roller.
U.S. Marshals cuffed Williams and took him away, back to solitary confinement, where he's allowed one call per month. After the hearing, Prosecutor Zosmer said Williams' crimes had serious consequences for the whole city.
To call the criminal justice system into disrepute, to make the job of the assistant district attorneys so much harder in prosecuting crime in our city by committing all of these crimes.
As part of the plea deal, Williams can't appeal his conviction, but he does have 2 weeks to appeal his sentence, though appeals courts usually don't meddle in sentencing decisions by trial judges. Zosmer, meanwhile, had this message for other elected officials watching the Williams case.
Which is that we will find you, we will prosecute you, and what happened today will happen to you.
Bobby Allen, WHYY News.
Meanwhile, there are new charges in another federal investigation here. This to look into whether Philadelphia Congressman Bob Brady paid a challenger to drop out of the 2012 race. WHYY's Dave Davies reports.
Prosecutors have said in court filings Brady paid his 2012 primary challenger Jimmy Moore $90,000 from his campaign fund to retire Moore's campaign debt. Prosecutors say Ann Moore is prepared to testify that this was part of a deal to get Moore out of the race. Prosecutors say the parties agreed to disguise the $90,000 in campaign finance reports as payments to a couple of political consultants. A grand jury has now charged Ken Smuckler and Don Jones, longtime associates of Brady's, with conspiring to violate campaign finance laws. Brady's attorney, Jim Eisenhower, says the congressman did agree to help Moore with his campaign debts after Moore had already decided to withdraw from the race.
This is not an uncommon occurrence in politics. It was a generous gesture on the part of the congressman to help a vanquished opponent. Nothing illegal about it, nothing wrong, and in fact, the congressman has not been charged.
Two people, including Moore, have already pleaded guilty in the investigation, not for accepting money to get out of a political race, but for disguising what happened with dummy transactions involving Smuckler and Jones. Is Brady vulnerable to a similar charge? only if he was directly involved in arranging the payments, and his attorney insists he wasn't.
The congressman doesn't really know the details of these transactions. He does have faith in Smuckler and Jones. He's worked with them both for years and considers them good people and hopes that they'll be exonerated.
Both Smuckler and Jones declined comment. Jones' attorney, Robert Trimble, says his client will be exonerated. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
A Jewish cemetery that was vandalized last February has been restored. Hundreds of headstones that were toppled and broken are fixed, though none of the perpetrators have been caught. WHYY's Peter Krimmerins reports that the repair was an international effort.
After news broke that someone, or probably several people, toppled 275 headstones in the Mount Carmel Cemetery in Philadelphia's Wissanoming neighborhood, thousands of people from around the world contributed small amounts of money to the Jewish Federation of Greater Philadelphia, totaling about $300,000. After the work was done, people gathered at the cemetery to sing a prayer for peace. Mayor Jim Kenney teared up while giving a blessing.
I'm a little for Clint.
Kenney, who grew up Irish Catholic in South Philadelphia, said members of the Jewish community have always been his friends and neighbors, and he said he's worried our current politics encourage such desecration.
We have white supremacists and Nazis marching through a college in Virginia with the President of the United States saying there was good people on both sides. There wasn't good people on both sides. One side was nothing but bad people.
The money raised by the Jewish Federation went to repairing headstones, leveling the landscaping, and fixing the security fence around the cemetery. Volunteers provided much of the labor. This is outside the normal operations of the Jewish Federation. President Naomi Adler says the organization usually raises money for combating hunger and poverty and providing education.
We normally deal with the living. We're not going to be able to do this for every cemetery, obviously, but this was such an act of desecration. And to us, an act of hatred, and we could actually do something. So we said, let's do that together.
Mount Carmel Cemetery abuts a public park, Wissanoming Park, where a mural advocating tolerance has been painted since the stones were overturned. The two properties are separated by an aging fence, and the Jewish Federation is calling on the city to be a good neighbor by replacing it. Mayor Kenney said he'll see what he can do. Peter Krimmerins, WHYY News.
Children of color and immigrant children in Pennsylvania are not receiving sufficient education and family support services. That's according to the 2017 Race for Results report out today by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Joining me to make sense of the numbers is Joan Benso, President and CEO of Pennsylvania Partnerships for Children. Joan Benso, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
One of your organization's goals is to position Pennsylvania as one of the top 10 states in the nation to be a child and to raise a child. How far are we from that goal at this juncture?
Pennsylvania ranks 18th in overall child well-being, and when you disaggregate that data by certain minority groups, it looks much worse.
So what are some of the highlights or lowlights from this report?
Some of the most worrisome part of this report is that when you look at the performance of Pennsylvania's children on a composite score that looks at issues like low birth weight babies, education attainment, number of children who live in a household with a parent with a high school diploma or a two-parent household, really key measures of family stability and investments that will ensure kids' success, you found that our Latino kids rank 48th in the nation. Our African-American children are deep into the 30s. Our Asian and white kids do better, but they don't do in the top 10 in either case. They don't do well enough.
2017 Race for Results is a snapshot. How is it trending, though, over time?
What we know when we look at how Pennsylvania's kids are doing versus other states' kids, for example, our children who are Latino kids and our African-American kids are doing very poorly in the national measure of education reading proficiency for fourth graders. Only 18% of Latinos and 17% of African Americans are proficient. Now, I will tell you, less than half of white kids are proficient. So we have an overall problem. And when you ask yourselves, where does that problem come from? It comes from Pennsylvania's long and historic broken public education funding system. And until we passed a formula 2 years ago, we didn't have, for example, for Latino kids, an additional weight in our school funding formula that acknowledges that children who come to school and aren't English language learners need more supports, and more supports equals more resources.
Yeah. And so you listed Pennsylvania as 18. Can we look to neighboring states, New Jersey, New York, Delaware, Maryland, for insight into how to better the situation here?
I think your listeners, clearly part of them are living in New Jersey, and they enjoy a much more robust and healthy school funding system. They have pre-K available to every student who attends a high-poverty district, and that's been going on for New Jersey for decades.
Many of the causes you listed are long-term. Were there any surprises in this study?
Well, I would have to say that, regrettably, we weren't surprised. What we know is that, you know, this piecemeal approach we have to try to solving the problems of Pennsylvania's kids and families and our investments are just simply not enough to push us into that top 10 standing. And this organization and our colleagues across the Commonwealth won't stop until we get there. We're encouraged about the headway we're making, but we've got a long way to go.
In addition to the frustrations, list some of the highlights during your tenure with Pennsylvania Partnerships.
Well, you know, if I was talking to you a little more than 10 years ago, I would not have been able to say to you that Pennsylvania invested any money in a high-quality pre-kindergarten program. So I would have had to say to you that virtually no child got the opportunity to go to publicly funded high-quality pre-kindergarten. And now the Commonwealth invests over $250,000 in that initiative. But we need another 300 to get to all the kids who really need the services. If I was talking to you at the beginning of our organization's founding 25 years ago, the state didn't have a CHIP law. We had a much higher rate of uninsurance. And those are things that have gotten are positive. Again, the new school funding formula that was enacted, really went into effect 3 years ago, was codified 2 years ago, is a great step in the right direction. We are on the right playing field now. We just need to get all the players on the field.
Thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you so much for your interest.
Joan Benso is president and CEO of Pennsylvania Partnerships for Children. In Delaware, the advent of school choice has resulted in 1 in 5 K-12 students now attending classes outside their home district. Though that trend is having devastating effects on the Christina School District, as WHYY's Chris Barish reports.
When the small marching band at Christiana High School made its way down the hill to the football stadium on a recent Friday, the scene starkly illustrated the trouble facing the Christiana School District. Christiana fielded a team of just 25 players. The opponent, Conrad Schools of Science, brought twice as many players, and its fans dwarfed the Christiana Rooters. Conrad rolled over Christiana 34-0. The lopsided score and numbers document the exodus of Christina students to charter schools in other districts, 38%, most in Delaware by far. Christina school board member Elizabeth Page says the number of empty desks grows each year.
We definitely have capacity in our buildings. There's conversations that have been simmering for a long time now about that issue.
The problem is worst at the district's three high schools, Christiana, Glasgow, and Newark. Together, they are less than half full. You could close Christiana High, send its 700 students to the two other schools, and still have room for 1,000 more. Tricia Stallings, whose son is a Christiana freshman, was stunned by its emptiness. Before they moved to the district, he was headed to a 2,100-student high school.
When we brought him here to Christiana, I figured, okay, well, it's about the same amount, but then it was like, it's only 700 students. Oh, okay, that's a huge difference.
School board member John Young says it's time to consider getting serious about shuttering buildings that are aging and cost millions of dollars a year to maintain.
If you don't have enough students in the school, you don't have enough money to offer that type of programmatic diversity.
Matt. Governor John Carney recently toured Bancroft Elementary and Byard Middle Schools in Christina. Both are barely 30% full.
The Christiana board and administration will obviously have to make some hard decisions. Nobody likes to close schools, but you don't want to have buildings that are half full.
Kendall Massett, head of the Delaware Charter Schools Network, says half-empty high schools are a burden to taxpayers.
If they are that under capacity in their schools, they should consider closing one of those schools.
Christina Superintendent Richard Gregg would not agree to an interview, but his spokeswoman said he, quote, considers underutilized buildings a challenge. Approached at Bancroft while he toured with the governor, Gregg said he's, quote, not ready to give up any of our buildings. Officials also denied WHYY's Freedom of Information request for the cost in 2016 to maintain Christiana High. Their response, quote, there are no reports that provide the information you request. Young says taxpayers should be concerned.
The costs, I would say, are prohibitive. I would say certainly close to at least $1 million or more per school.
So where do the 8,700 students who have fled Christina go to school? Nearly two-thirds are in charter schools, a trend that keeps rising. Massett of the Charter Schools Network says they are clearly attractive to Christina parents.
They're going towards something that works for their kid. Some kids don't do well in those big comprehensive high schools. They thrive in a smaller, more family-like setting.
2,200 go to two-time National Blue Ribbon winner Newark Charter. Several other charters teach hundreds of Christina kids. Thousands more attend Votek schools, or they use the school choice program to go to another district. Dissatisfaction led Tara Ann Williams to take her daughter out of Christina.
There's a lack of discipline within the schools with some of the kids, and it causes the kids that are really there for their education to take a step back and not want to be involved.
Her daughter is now excelling at Frieri Charter in Wilmington.
She had honor roll all four marking periods. She captain of her cheerleading team.
School board member Young says it's not just what works for individual students. He says leadership has been inconsistent with several superintendents in recent years.
That discontinuous leadership really, I think, contributed to us not having a consistent message or the ability to react as nimbly as we needed to.
Christina is trying to win back kids, but should these strategies fail, Paige from the board says the fate of schools with proud legacies could hang in the balance.
I can tell you if you tried to close Glasgow, I'm an alumni of Glasgow, I'd be very upset. My husband, who went to Christiana High School, would not like to see his building sold or razed. And my daughter, who graduated from Newark. There are people who say, you can't close Newark, it's Newark. So I'm really glad that there's that amount of school pride amongst our high schools to know that that's going to be a battle. That's a good battle. That's a good problem to have.
From the Delaware desk, Chris Barish, WHYY News.
Residents of Rittenhouse Square, one of Philadelphia's wealthiest neighborhoods, are raising thousands of dollars with hopes of helping the homeless who gather in the public park outside their doors. Details from WHYY's Aaron Moselle.
Ashley Cotman and Sharika Morgan could probably walk Rittenhouse Square blindfolded. The pair has been strolling the popular park and the blocks of high-end real estate around it for weeks. Not for exercise, but to offer help to the homeless who routinely sit and sleep on benches in the square and the surrounding corners.
Today it's kind of empty. Yes, sir.
Cotman and Morgan are outreach workers with Mental Health Partnerships, an organization that provides a variety of services to homeless people, particularly those struggling with mental illness and drug addictions. 5 days a week, they hit the streets to offer people in and around Rittenhouse the opportunity to grab a meal, a hot shower, even a washing machine to do laundry. Cotman says it takes time and a lot of patience to get people to come to New Life, the organization's drop-in center in West Philly.
We just make it clear that we're just trying to feed you and get you a shower, and that's it. And after they keep seeing our faces and we're saying the same thing, then eventually they'll come with us.
Initially, Cotman and Morgan's positions were only funded through the end of the month. Now, thanks to more than $100,000 of private donations to their organization, they'll at least work through the winter, a critical time for helping the homeless. The money is also going towards transportation costs and housing assistance. Rittenhouse resident Tracy Blumenfeld helped launch the fundraising effort.
I've only lived on this square about 6 years, and there were dramatic changes happening here, like visible and dramatic changes in terms of the number of homeless people. And, you know, it's just discouraging to walk out into the square in the morning and see people lying on a bench in the backdrop of kids playing, you know, on statues and stuff.
The fundraising got underway as Philly's homeless population was on the rise, and Rittenhouse Square became headline news. First for a high-profile shooting in the park, robbers shot a biker who tried to stop them, then for a short-lived ban on sitting on a ring of low-slung interior walls, imposed by the city after neighbors complained they promoted loitering and drug use. At the time, some critics said that Rittenhouse's wealthy neighbors were cloaking exclusion and public safety. Blumenfeld insists the fundraising is only motivated by goodwill. William Smith has been homeless off and on for the better part of a decade.
Some people call me Will, but if I was the Will Smith in Hollywood, I'd buy this park and everybody in it. They all have a home.
Rittenhouse Square is always Smith's home base when he's living on the streets. He says he doesn't always need help, but he appreciates being asked because he knows there will be a day when he'll want it.
It makes me almost want to cry because I know God loves me. But these young ladies don't even know me, but they always come and ask me.
Since August, outreach workers have helped roughly 20 homeless people head to Mental Health Partnership's drop-in center for services. Aaron Mosell, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.